welcome to our very first Bird on a Wire podcast on tour. I'm Lou Ann Bird, your host for this series. And my guest here is Tyler Kelly, who I met recently at a conference on guns, on gun violence. And he's so impressive that I felt that he'd be a great way to start. So I do want to thank you all for coming, because this is really for you. And I have been doing podcasts now for the last couple of months, and I did a series of them with Dan Schaefer. And every time we did it, we just walked away with something very powerful. We learned things, and we're trying to build really hope and civility and action, putting that all together. How can, if you have hope, which is what we learned from one of the Persisters podcasts, then that means there's work to do. So there's those kind, these conversations are spurring this kind of action maybe that we'll want to see as well. And then civility is something we all know we need in politics. We need to figure out ways to work in a civil way, that we're not tearing each other down, and we can yet fight passionately for the issues we care about. So, you know, there's people that are still sorting out how to do that. But that is really what I said yes to when they asked me to run a year ago in the assembly against Bob Donovan. So that's when I said, okay, instead of complaining about everything going on, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to try and change things. So that's how we ended up here, short version. You can learn more about me. I'm not here to talk about me. You can go to some of the earlier podcasts or just Google my name, and there's a lot out there. I hate to say it, but there it is. Anyway, so without further ado, I would like to introduce Tyler. He is a stell that you introduce yourself. Go ahead.
Yeah. So my name is Tyler Kelly. I'm a student activist. I'm going into my fourth year at Carthage College. I've been doing gun violence prevention work for just about the past 6 years. The Parkland school shooting happened my sophomore year of high school. And really that day, I felt like I was watching my own high school. I felt like the kids that were coming on the stage and speaking directly at the NRA, I felt like those were my speech teammates, whereas they were speech kids all the way down from Florida. But I really realized that gun violence is a problem that affects every person in my generation. And while I started in this like kind of school shooting, that kind of area, through activism, I learned so much. I've worked with a bunch of different organizations throughout the state of Wisconsin, kind of connecting civic engagement and political work with preventing gun violence, because here in the state of Wisconsin, we have a 50-50 split of Democrats and Republicans that vote, but that's not the reality that we see in our state government. Our Assembly and Senate have near 2/3 majorities of Republicans, making the common sense gun bills that we know would save a lot of lives, it makes them impossible without significant political change. So preventing gun violence starts in some ways with this political change that I became interested in. So yeah, I ran Milwaukee's chapter of March for Our Lives for the ending years of my high school, and have continued to work on. I'm sure we'll talk about the 80% Coalition, which is a coalition that represents over 1 million Wisconsinites between many faith-based organizations. There's businesses, there's advocacy groups, large and small, that all come together in order to say that it's time to take some common sense action to prevent some gun deaths. So yeah, I'm excited to talk today. I think this message of civility and action is very important.
So do you feel that things have changed for the better since you've been involved?
So an issue that I have with a lot of progressive people is we fail to celebrate our victories. And I never want to be that person. So I have to say that I'm really happy about some of the things that the Biden administration has gotten done, passing the first gun bill of my lifetime. And I'm not going to, nobody is claiming that this is something that's like a complete paradigm shift, but it's a start of progress, expanding background checks, incentivizing extreme risk protection orders. These things are very important, allowing states to share data, ensuring that hey, if you're a criminal in the state of Wisconsin, but then you move to Illinois, that all of the criminal records are shared. These are things the federal government has to do. So yes, there has been progress that's been made. Has it been as significant as it needs to be? Certainly not.
Okay, so a lot of people were shook up when Parkland happened, but what is it that catapulted you into action?
Yeah, I think it was one of the first times that I really saw students taking the lead. A lot of times you'll see students put in the front of a political movement as kind of like this like chess piece that like, oh, we're going to show you our smart kid. We're going to inspire you, say that the next generation is going to take over. But Parkland was truly youth-led. I met some of the kids that were a part of the movement, and they were truly in a basement, as any good kid would run a political movement from, right? They were trying to pass their year of high school at the same time that they were running a national political movement. And that youth work expanded, and I've since met some great adults who've been able to support my political work. And yeah, I think that it was a moment where at the same time kids realized that they could take the lead and adults realized, oh, we can back off a little bit. Like these young people, this next generation, they can really make a difference, because we see the state of Florida as this like conservative stronghold now, 6 years later. But there were significant gun reform bills passed in the state of Florida in 2018 after Parkland. And that was in no way that can be understated due to the work of young people taking the lead, getting bills passed, and, well, now Ron DeSantis starting to eliminate those bills, and the work needs to continue. But this movement produced the first Gen Z congressman, Max Frost, who ran organizing for March for Our Lives at one point. So I think that this is the kind of a movement that is engaging young people and will be creating lifelong politically active activists that will help reinvent what the Democratic Party and what liberal politics are.
I saw something on Facebook that you were doing last year, and I remember reaching out to you because I thought, wow, I don't remember what it was you did, but you have been really involved. And it was so impressive. So I did reach out to you back then. But then I most recently got to hear you talk at a session for that the gun violence summit that they had in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago. And Tyler facilitated a group of young people, and the title was Lockdown Generation. And it just really opened my eyes as to how violence and gun violence, I should say, is impacting our kids, what it looks like from our youth. So do you want to give us your reaction to that? Because it was quite powerful for me.
Yeah, so sort of the chair of the 80% Coalition is a mentor of mine, Daryl Maureen. He organizes with Forward Latino, and he told me that he wanted to do this, and he gave me kind of a preliminary list of the different breakout sessions, and he had in there youth gun violence, we need to do something. And I was like, we should call it Generation Lockdown, because it's something that I've heard people refer to our generation as this generation of people who have sat in their classrooms practicing just in case there would be a shooting, because it's more logical to practice a mass shooting rather than pass reforms to prevent one, someone decided. Regardless, I thought that would be a fitting name, and in all honesty, it was a forum that had zero preparation. I pulled aside all the young people in the room that I could find at the beginning of the day. And I was confident that every single young person has an experience with gun violence. And at this summit, we had people from all throughout the state of Wisconsin. So it was not just kids from the city of Milwaukee, kids that lived in rural communities, in suburban communities, and in the city. And they all had such different perspectives as to how gun violence affected them. The most likely cause of death for a person under the age of 18 in our state and country is by a gun. It's something that is astonishing, and every one of those deaths is preventable. But it's certainly something that influences young people, and it's something young people are thinking about. And I was really happy that the coalition was able to provide you at the summit an opportunity for young people to speak their truth. And we heard from Luann and all the other people that participated, that we were able to watch, saying that it was insightful to see that young people see this issue a little bit differently, because for our whole lives, this has been our reality. I think that gun violence and this conversation, it's not something that has been a reality for 50 years as like this top issue in America. But for my entire life, it really has been one of these top issues. I was in elementary school when Sandy Hook happened. I was in high school when Parkland happened, right? So there's something that activists are talking about, that we're having our second generation of kids with school shootings, because now the kids that were at Columbine have kids that are in elementary school now, right? So it's a scary time in our nation. Just this week, there's already been 7 people under the age of 18 that have been shot in the city of Milwaukee, which is wild. Every single day of the week, we're recording this on a Wednesday for context. So it's just kind of a scary reality, from rural suicides to homicides in the city. That young people are dealing with this as a reality.
So some of the comments we heard from the students at the summit were things like, teachers are telling us to use a desk as a protection, and it's something we're supposed to be sitting in and getting a lecture with. It wasn't designed to save us or protect us. Do you remember that comment and some of the other comments?
Yeah, I remember my own experiences. Shortly after Parkland, we had a band class where the class had a debate as to what band equipment would be the best weapon in the case of a school shooting. That's not normal. That's not something that should happen. I don't see why that conversation is more logical than taking legislative action. And it's going to take far more than legislative action to solve gun violence, but some common sense reform is the start. And I'm happy to live in a state where there are politicians that are beginning to listen and continuing to propose legislation and trying to start a conversation as to how to prevent gun violence. But something that I'm hearing that is really important to me is, we need to first have a hearing. We need to discuss gun violence. Can you believe that gun violence is the leading cause of death amongst children in the state of Wisconsin, but there hasn't been a hearing on a gun reform bill in the past 6 years? It's wild.
And in fact, isn't that one of the first gavel in, gavel out sessions where the governor tried to call the Republicans into session?
Yeah, so in January of 2020, there was a special session on gun violence. The governor has the right to call the legislature into session. So for that, I, of course, went up to Madison, went to meet with the caucus. We held a nice press conference at 10 in the morning, like you do on a session day. And then they decided, oh, we're not going to gavel in, because it doesn't say we have to gavel in the morning like a normal person would. So the Republicans waited us out. They sat in their offices until 6 o'clock. They gaveled in. 13 seconds later, they gaveled out. And that was their legislative session. That was what they could come up with.
How did that make you feel that day? What did that feel like?
Well, I really felt for all of the victims that were there. You know, I was at the press conference where the governor announced the special session. Immediately before the governor made his announcement, 3 or 4 mothers talked about the experience of having their children murdered. This is something that is deeply personal to people. And again, right now we're having a civil discussion. It's what we're doing, but there's something that our legislature has not been able to do. They're afraid to talk about gun violence because the positions are deeply unpopular in the Republican Party. The Marquette Law Poll has consistently found well over 80% of Wisconsinites support both the universal background checks and extreme risk protection order legislation. And Democrats will continue to talk about it. It just got reposed within this legislative session. I saw Lou Anne at that press conference calling for a safe summer. We're well on track for having the deadliest year to gun violence in our country's history. And generally, the pickup of gun violence is when the weather gets nice in the summer. I had a statistics teacher teach me that gun violence deaths and ice cream sales are correlated during the summer. You see more gun violence when people are outside. These are scary realities, but the legislature wants to take action. They want to have a discussion. Republicans make lots of claims about gun violence. They say it's a cultural issue. They say it's not the gun. I'd ask them, why won't you discuss these things? Just this week, the Republicans announced they will not be funding the Office of School Safety within the Department of Justice in the state of Wisconsin. And we ask, why? You know, this is an issue. It's the number one killer of people in my generation. And I think this is why my generation is so politically active, why we're voting at record numbers, why college campuses have been a top place of turnout, not just in presidential elections, but in off-year elections now. So yeah, there's some combination within of both resentment in my generation, but then also I have hope because we're engaged, not by choice, but because we really feel like we have to be, the lives depend on it.
Well, I have to share with you that let me share this. On May 10th, I believe it was, I got a text from my sister saying that my nephew had taken his life the night before, and would I tell my brothers? And it was, you know, one of those heart-wrenching, awful things. I'm sure a lot of you have lost loved ones. It's just so hard. I was thinking about it today and preparing for this. He took his life with a gun that he shouldn't have had. That's why I'm taking this so hard. He was 51 years old. He had struggled with some depression and anxiety issues for a long time. And he has two beautiful daughters, and they tried their best to help their dad, but he just couldn't figure it out. And he had been estranged from my sister for about 9 years, so I haven't seen him in a long time. But still, getting that phone call or getting that message and then making a call and then going up with my sister to go to his place and listen to his ex-wife talk about that experience of, we were worried about him. They couldn't find him. They went to the house. They took the gun away. And he got all mad when he came home and found them there and pushed her off the porch. And then, you know, they went home. But then he complained to the police because they had taken his gun. And he had to give it back. The girls had to give their dad a gun back that they knew might. And I asked the girls, I know I'm a little sidetracked, but I asked the girl, you know, we're working together through this grief. And so for my family, I'm the most active one in my family. And some of my family members don't even understand gun legislation or what the issues are. So it's been a little bit tricky, but I've reached out to the girls. They love that you're all here. They were so impressed that we were doing this. And Tyler, they're very impressed with the work that you're doing. Now, they wanted to make a statement. So I said, I asked them what I should say. And she said this today. Kylie said, I'm sure you'll find just the right words to say, Luann. Feel free to talk about my dad. You could talk about how his access to a firearm always made us anxious and ended up providing him the means needed to take his life. We want to advocate for more strict mental health regulations on gun ownership. So she said, this is being recorded. I'd love to see it. So it isn't just that he took his life. It was all those years of them trying and having that weapon in the home and being very worried about him. So when that happened to me, it all of a sudden it became personal. And actually, after I lost the campaign, during my campaign, I met a trauma surgeon through my campaign, Dr. Catherine Wilkinson. And she wanted to come knock on doors with me. So we go on doors, last year this was, and she's talking up gun violence to some guy, this guy that hasn't even talked to us. And she said, look, I'm a trauma surgeon, and I see these kids coming into the ER all the time. And there are several what she called low-hanging fruit bills that if we could pass those bills, we could save lives. So she really impacted my life. This was, you know, last year. And then when I lost, she contacted me and she said, maybe we could get these bills through. So I said, sure. So we met with Bob Donovan right after I lost, like in probably in December. And we had a meeting with Bob Donovan, and she shared all of her data that she had, and she had other trauma surgeons there that day. We met with Bob. We laid out all these bills we wanted to see passed, you know, and then so we've been in touch. Keep talking to Bob whenever he had listening sessions. I go, and he's got sticky notes in his office of these bills because we aren't giving up. We weren't going to give up on that. So then this happens, and I called his office right away and said, you know, I just want you to know that this, you know, this is personal for me now, and here's what happened. And anyway, so then, so I go to that, obviously I go to the summit first. I'm devastated. What can I do? So hard, because I feel like if those laws, if the red flag laws, also known as the Extreme Risk Protection Act, had been in place, how different his daughter's lives would have been. And I'm convinced he would still be alive today. So for me, it catapulted me. First of all, it made me, I'm grateful that I've been involved. I'm grateful that you're all involved. That's why you're here tonight. Thank you. Thank you for all the action that you do. Then I decided to go to the hearing because Representative Andraca was introducing these bills again. Not the first time, but this is like, again, 3, 4, 5 times. I don't know how many times. So there's this beautiful press conference, all these great speakers right in the assembly chamber, tons of press around. And I mean, I was glad I was there to show support. And then I immediately went down to Bob Donovan's office to talk to Stephen about these bills are coming and could Bob sign on to those. And then he wanted to know what happened to my nephew so I could tell him what it was like to go to the house and see his animals still there and see the blood and see the gloves. And just, this is what we are going through in our family right now. It's just awful. So Stephen then, then I called him because last week I want to mogul them again. Now these bills are out. I want to know where he stands. And Stephen told me that he's signing on to the Extreme Risk Protection Act, which is the one bill that might have saved my nephew. So there's progress. There's hope. And we just have to keep the pressure on. But I have to tell you, though, when I drove away that day, I felt like the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So here we were in Madison again, right? Introducing these bills again. And now I'm going home. Yes, I talked to my legislator, but I didn't know what's going to ever change things. And then I realized, well, wait a minute. If I hadn't run, at least in my world, I've been able to make one little change. And I guess maybe that's what it's going to take, huh? These personal stories.
Well, if you want to talk about how to change things, you mentioned the name Deb Andraca, and there was a difference between the first press conference I went to hear universal background checks and ERPO be proposed and the second. And in the first, Deb Andraca was there standing next to me in a Moms Demand Action t-shirt as an activist. And in the second, she was a legislature proposing the bills herself. She ran at a Republican incumbent and won. Talking about gun violence, it was a top issue of her campaign. She was an activist. She was a mom, a teacher, concerned about this issue. And what we say in gun violence prevention now is if we can't change gun laws, we have to change our legislature. Got to change the people sitting in those seats. So that's certainly one of the most important actions. And I'm really glad that you stepped up, Luann, as an engaged member of your community to run for office. Because without people running, we have no chance at making these changes.
Thank you. And I feel the same way about you because it's it breaks my heart what we're doing to our youth when the message is we're not going to do anything about guns. So here's what we're going to do. Teachers are going to have guns and, you know, we're going to arm our teachers or we're putting it on teachers to go in and do these lockdown drills with these kids, right? And in some cases, one girl told a story when she was 5, wasn't it? And the teacher they were doing the lockdown drill, and the teacher, she said, this is when it became serious and scary for her. When the teacher said, if anything happens to me, you protect yourself. Grab a scissors or whatever else is in the room, and I'll protect yourself. And I mean, we just should, we are traumatizing our children. And then another young person said, but we're not, the message is we're not going to do anything about gun. You're just going to keep walking down our schools. Well, we had a change. How do we change that, Tyler? How else do we change that? What can this group do out here? What can our listeners do?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of changing to do. Gun violence prevention is happening at every single level of government.
This is Luann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
Bird on a Wire podcast will be right back.
This is Luann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
We had a change. How do we change that, Tyler? How else do we change that? What can this group do out here? What can our listeners do?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of changing to do. Gun violence prevention is happening at every single level of government. School board members are hearing pitches for building schools with angular hallways so shooters can't shoot as kids from as far down the hallway. These are the things that are being talked about, so I think we need rational people running our schools. I think that's a part of it. I think running for office is a part of it. There's great community organizations in every corner of the state and every part of this country that are fighting for gun violence prevention. Both on a political side, but then also there's support at a city level. Green Bay just announced they're opening an Office of Violence Prevention. Milwaukee also has one. Both have been found. They go and they meet with families of victims of gun violence, and they meet with them immediately in hospitals and these kind of things, and they're able to decrease homicides by discouraging revenge shootings. These things have been found to work. It's not all... we should start with the guns, but it's not just about the guns. We should create offices of violence prevention and make sure that they're fully funded. There's a lot to be done. I think that we also have to have conversations about gun violence and the realities of gun violence. I'm really happy that you and your family are talking about suicide. There's a large issue in our culture that we failed to talk about suicide. If I asked you who's the most likely person to be a victim of gun violence in this state or country, I think you'd have a very different picture than a 50-year-old white man dying to his own gun. But that's the reality in our state and in our country. We fail to talk about these things. You say that this isn't saving any lives if all the people that are dying of gun violence are dying of suicides. A gun suicide is 11 times more likely to result in death than suicide by another method. These are facts. These are researched. There's significant research going on. If you want to talk about progress that we've seen, just within the past 6 years since I've been doing gun violence prevention, the CDC is now studying gun violence as a public health issue. So we're getting these great study results about what is the problem. The problem definition is becoming much clearer. So I think listening and talking about these things that may be taboo topics like mental health and suicide, all of these things have to come together to have a comprehensive, community-based solution to gun violence.
So I'm thinking about my podcast with Dr. Wilkinson, and we recorded that, if you get a chance. It's very powerful. When what she said is this: we have to challenge our fatalistic attitude about guns. We have to stop thinking that we can't do anything about it. And then she even caught me later on in the podcast, said, no, I said something like, well, not everybody can knock on doors. And she goes, no, that's just not true. You know, everybody can. You know, we all have to do our part to challenge the fatalistic attitude. So then here's where that became real clear to me is after Derek died. First of all, I want to say the family thinks it's all their fault, and it's not. The gun was the method, the mental health issues, the challenges, the hopelessness that Derek felt for years, the alcohol. That's the problem. Taking the gun away isn't the solution. That just keeps him alive. The solution is connecting that to some help and some some services, right? And so people, even in my own family, would say, when I mention now I'm working on guns, you know, there's differences of opinion out there, even in my family. But I keep hearing comments like, well, he would have found another way. No, you don't know that. And we can't use that as an excuse to not take guns away from anybody who's going to harm themselves or someone else. So I have had to challenge people. And it really took me by surprise. I had to learn how to say no. Or well, you know, there's guns everywhere. They'll get a gun, even if he can get it. It can't get it legally. They'll find a gun. I'm like, no. No, you can't say that. We can't use that as an excuse not to get this legislation passed. So I also want to add that I think we can make a big difference day to day in our conversations with people around us. And I have to say, all these years I've hated guns. I didn't make my first phone call on banning assault rifles until like 2 weeks ago. And thanks to the Persisters for passing around the phone number, made it easy. We passed around the phone number to Chuck Schumer's office, and that aide I talked to was so delighted that I called. It's just one more thing that we can do to stop this violence so that this next generation doesn't have to go through what you guys are going through, right?
Yeah, I think taking action is certainly important. I'd also be remiss to not talk about the fact that we don't regulate the gun industry in any way, in a meaningful way, shape, or form. When somebody has multiple DUIs, we don't let them drive anymore. If somebody commits multiple crimes, they can go on Facebook Marketplace and buy a weapon. It's the way that it works. And the producer of the weapon should have some responsibility for its use. It's how, if you get food poisoned, you can sue a restaurant, but if you get shot, you can't sue the person that made the gun. It doesn't make any sense. And I'm one of the greatest allies we have in the state of Wisconsin is our Attorney General, Josh Hall, and he's committed to do whatever he can, including looking into this next generation of how can we hold the gun manufacturing industry accountable. And one of the bills that we're talking about in this session for the safe summer is something that I hadn't even thought of. If you want to buy a gun safe, you pay state sales tax on it. Well, why don't we take that away? Let's take the first, easiest, most logical step. Let's encourage people to buy gun lockers by using tax incentives. This is like, in my introduction to public policy political science class, like the easiest thing you could ever write, like a policy proposition paper on, right? Because it's just pure good. You're using the government to encourage people to do what will help themselves and their communities. I think the legislation that we're talking about here in Wisconsin, purely logical. We've got to get it done, and we've got to run great people like Lou Anne Bird for office until we have a legislature that will do it.
Well, I say we need more Tylers getting involved to make a big difference. So, we can create change in many ways. And I am happy to have the time to put into this issue that I've got right now. So if there's an upside to losing, it's that. It's that I could dive in and I could use the network of wonderful people to help make some changes in our world. But that gun thing really obviously became a priority for me right now. And actually, safety is a big deal for everyone. Safety. So since that happened, you know, I'm locking up our gun. We had hunting guns, never gave it a thought. Now it's like, wait a minute. It was pretty easy. You just go buy a case with the right little holes and get some, you know, little master locks and boom, problem solved. I was amazed how easy. So, but while I'm in there, I'm looking at the people around me. There was a young woman when I pulled up to Dunham's, and this is in West Allis, and her windshield had a hole in it, and there was glass all on her dash. And she was young, and she gets out of it and this car, and she goes marching in, and I end up in the same place as she is, only she's looking at buying a handgun. And I'm like, did someone shoot your windshield out? And she goes, no, they did it like this. But she's trying that gun on, and, you know, and she's got her license, and I'm just kind of observing the process now in a different way than I ever did before. And then I see all these young guys checking out, buying bullets. And I just got to go, why? You know, I'm sure there's more to it than just guns. We have to figure out the thinking side of this. Why are people turning to violence? Why are our young people doing that, right? Why are they not getting the help that they might need in our schools or in our families? It's really difficult to get an appointment. In fact, someone recently told me they were worried about their daughter committing suicide. And so they call the doctor. They go like, oh, 6 months out. She says, I can't wait 6 months. You know, so we need to really also continue to not just rest on our laurels when we get these gun bills passed. We've got to treat the people that are using these guns the wrong way, right, Tyler?
Yeah, I want to say two things. So first of all, we live in a strange society where we have more school resource officers than we do school social workers. It's new. It's quite frankly stupid because, first of all, in cases of school shootings, there's not very many examples where armed resource officers have actually been able to successfully stop shooters. So it's not effective on a policy ground there. But we have a mental health crisis beyond suicide and beyond gun violence going on, exacerbated by the pandemic within my generation and as a country as a whole. So the fact that we're losing school social workers and psychologists, not just in our schools and our inner cities, not just in rural communities. Even I went to a well-funded suburban public school, and there were more school social workers when I entered the K-12 system than when I left it. So that doesn't make sense, despite the fact that my school's grown. And it's the reality that we have all throughout our state. We were on the panel with kids that went to schools with over 1,000 people, and there's one social worker. You know, if you reach out and say, I need an appointment with the school social worker because I'm going through a crisis and they're booked for the next 5 months, that's a real life problem. I want to talk a little bit more about safe storage because I think it's really important. There's a couple of things that we don't discuss enough. The first of which is a lot of people get their guns by stealing them because they're not safely stored. Just because you live in a house without any child that could get to a gun doesn't mean your house couldn't get broken into at some point. And then there's a new illegal ghost gun on the streets, right? That is going to get sold off and is going to cause problems in the future. Storing your gun safely is about not just keeping yourself safe, but also your community safe. We hear about terrible stories every year of children getting a hold on guns that are sitting in bedside tables because that's the protection of your family that ends up killing your family. So having an unlocked gun in the home, there's relatively certain study that an unsafely stored gun will make your house more dangerous and not more safe. So something that we could legislate, right? We could require safe storage. These are all options, but the NRA has such a chokehold on the right-wing politicians in the Republican Party that it's just not a reality that we see right now.
Well, or maybe we have to challenge our own fatalistic thinking on that, Tyler, because maybe we can reach one-on-one the people that we need to reach. And I'm reading a book about how minds change right now. In fact, do a little book club on it because we all want to know, you know, how to solve these problems and how do we get the people in power to make the right decisions, right? That'll save lives. It seems so simple, right? As you and I sit here. But I don't believe it's totally hopeless that the NRA has such a stronghold anymore. I mean, I think we want to think that, but the truth is, I think we just got to work a little bit harder than the NRA. We just have to make those phone calls and build relationships with the very people that are making those laws, when they will let you, because I understand it's pretty hard to get in to talk to Ron Johnson, even my own state senator, Bradley, months out sometimes just to talk to him. So there are some challenges with that, I realize, but we can't give up, right? We have to tell the stories.
And giving up isn't the option, and putting all of our eggs in one legislative basket is also not a good option. There's great organizations, including Public Office of Violence Prevention, working alongside Every Town for Gun Safety, Your Moms Demand Action, to hand out free gun locks at community events, right? These are practical solutions. They don't need to involve the government all the time. It doesn't have to be a law that passes the state legislature, but talking, taking action, these things, it's a holistic approach. Part of taking a public health approach to gun violence, because gun violence is an epidemic in our country, is not acting like this is purely a legislative problem. That does not mean that we're going to give up on the legislative side anytime soon either.
So is, like, your mom super proud of you, Okaya? She's here tonight, for those of you that are listening to this podcast. Is your family very political? Is this where you get all their stuff?
So it's kind of funny. So my mom was introducing herself to people around here, and the way that she was introducing herself is, well, my son kind of pushed me back into the politics. My mom's a social worker, which certainly has a part in the way that I ended up here, but she's also been a chapter lead for a Moms Demand Action organization around here, doing gun violence prevention work as well. So I don't come from a political family necessarily, but I'm really proud to get to do this work with my family, with a group of friends. Something that's really great for any people that are considering getting more involved in politics is you're not just doing good, you're also involving yourself with a great community. And I've gotten to meet great people to serve as mentors, as friends through this work. And that's something that I'm extremely grateful for.
Thank you. You know, we're down to about like 5 minutes. Didn't that go fast? That went so fast. I'm also wondering what you think in the audience. If anyone has any really strong thought or question for Tyler, maybe I could repeat the question and we can, you know, has this been helpful for you to hear him? And if so, how? And go ahead.
I'm a retired educator. And as a substitute teacher, I just remember looking at the list hanging on the door about what to do if there was a incident.
Linda is a retired school librarian, and she remembers seeing a list on the door of what to do if there was an incident.
And it just was so shocking because it was so different from what I was actually teaching.
It was so shocking because it was so different from when she was actually teaching.
They have added the sentence, you are to put your body in front of all of these children.
They added the sentence that you have to put your body in front of all of these children. If somebody comes in. Right.
And how you do this, I don't know, but it just brought it home to me. And also substituting, and
it brought it home to her. And substituting for a drill.
And having all these little kindergarten kids. Have to, you know, the teacher's directing them where to go in the classroom, and
the teachers are directing them how to hide. Jerome, you went through this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is heartbreaking. We spent class time going, practicing, walking from the school to the site where you would be gotten to your parents because it wasn't safe at the school. We walked the mile down from my high school to the little sports complex nearby, and that's how we spent an afternoon. We're supposed to be learning. But instead, yeah, and this is wasting administrators' time too. Somebody had to type up that document. There's people that are professional school safety officers. That is a career that people have, trying to figure out what's going to happen. And we know what the solution is. It's preventing children that shouldn't have guns from getting guns. It's scary, and I think it's draconian that that's the way that we have to live.
So can you tell us a little more about the 80% Coalition? We just have a minute or so left here.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So Wisconsin is following an organizing model that's been used in other states, trying to use coalition-based organizing to unite the 80% of Wisconsinites that find it unacceptable that we don't pass common sense gun reform. So the coalition is made up of all of the largest Milwaukee area religious institutions. A bunch of them have signed on. We have all of these actual gun violence prevention organizations, some adjacent advocacy groups. it's all of these groups that are coming together, even professional organizations. There's an organization of doctors that have joined because they're sick of treating, you know, these trauma surgeons. They don't want to be treating these bodies that are being mutilated by weapons of war that were purely designed to kill, yet we sell them to our citizens. So the coalition comes together. We ensure that our U.S. senators, that our congressional representatives, and that our state officials are aware that this is what the people want. We're able to provide resources to the different state leg staffs, and just generally get information to literally over a million represented people by the groups that are part of the coalition. So it's something that I'm proud to work on.
So for our time is up here, I just want to say, first of all, to our listening audience, that I hope you were moved by this story, and I hope that you will pick up that phone, meet with your legislators, and make those phone calls at the federal level as well as at your local level, because I think the wind is blowing in our direction, and our youth certainly need us to step up and work with them. It can't be them alone doing this work. So I'm hoping that that helps. I also want to take a minute to thank a shout out to my family. It's been very hard and very difficult. And I do want to send a message. You know, it was nothing they did. They were a loving family. They cared about their kids. The girls loved their dad. Just, it was very hard to figure all of that out. So a shout out to Emily and Kylie and all the rest of the family for what they're going through right now. And it could be avoided. So tonight, I dedicate this to Derek. May he rest in peace, though. And I hope that we can save some other lives by doing this. So thank you all so very much. I want you to know that Civic Media is going to run these podcasts, I think, on the weekends and starting now, because they're going to be our sponsor for the Bird on a Wire on Tour podcast coming up in the future. So, but thanks to all of you for coming tonight. Your support, your interest, your activism is what gives me hope. How about you, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, we have a podcast, listeners won't know. There's 20 people sitting behind the camera that we're probably awkwardly making eye contact with. Might look a little weird to you all, but we're glad that they're here. And I'm excited to see lots of people engaging in gun violence prevention right now, because it's what's going to make a difference. It's going to shift the paradigm.
So thank you all very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to Bird on a Wire on Civic Media, and that you're inspired to take action on issues you care about. For more episodes, visit us at civicmedia.us. I'm Lou Ann Bird. Thanks for listening.